This is a sermon given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website at saintdave.org.
The lessons that we heard read out of Scripture today remind me an awful lot of the modern world right this minute. There are four short bits of narrative from different places in our sacred texts from times long, long ago. And they are filled with chaos and political intrigue, with pleas for help from God, with a certainty about what God is doing in the world, with bad guys and good guys and people who are just sure that God is on their side, with guys in a boat doing a day's work, with sin and the confession of sin, with forgiveness, with miracle, and with warm breezes on the water. Okay, I made up that part about the warm breezes on the water. But I could use a warm breeze on the water right about now. All that to say that the lessons are full of anger, of terror, of hope and hopelessness, full of fear and trust and the breaching of trust, full of moving forward and moving backward and with love and compassion and, well, some guys on a boat. In the Old Testament, it's the call of the prophet Isaiah. We hear this high, lofty language of one person being called by God to do this huge work to lead the Hebrew people back to Jerusalem after three generations of slavery and hard labor. Then the psalmist calls for praise to God and trust in God's presence, even in the midst of trouble. Then the apostle Paul writes to the Corinthians in the midst of chaos and leadership struggles that are just behind the scenes of what he is talking about in this letter. And he reminds them of the truth of their faith and the dependability of the message that they preach, even when chaos abounded. And the guys on the boat, working futilely through the night, are invited by Jesus to get back in the boat and to cast off again, to go to different places than they normally go and to fish in ways unusual to them and to trust Jesus. I don't know, that feels a whole lot like the world we live in right now to me. Chaos abounds. Doubt and mistrust are happily gorging on the overabundance of chaos and fear and uncertainty that is running amok in the world right this minute. And it feels an awful lot like our political environment. I mean, do I even need to begin the litany of the chaos? I mean, y'all, it's literally butting up against us across 8th Street where the Pickle Building is now some sort of a detention center that we have to learn more about as a church and find out how can we step into that with the love of Jesus. Feels an awful lot like life here at St. David's. We got that. We got the financial struggles with the loss of income from the garage that we talked about last week. But we also have these great plans and all this great hope for the future. And literally, the March the 1st, hope is going to walk in the door. Her name is the Reverend Hope Binko as our new associate rector. So it's this thing, isn't it? Finally, maybe this is too personal, but feels a lot like my personal life. See, Chris and I love our work, but we worry over the people in our care. Chris is a high school teacher. She loves those kids. She's fretting over what's going to happen to public education in Texas. I love this parish. And I love fretting over all the beautiful, crazy, fun, chaotic spinning plates that make us St. David's. Both of us are fretting over the world that our children are now young adults in. how are they going to make it? Just this past week, I traveled to Virginia to see family. I needed to check on my mom. She's fine, but I just like to see her every couple times a year. But I also needed to go say goodbye to a niece. She and her Australian husband are taking their two little cherub children and moving to Australia just to get away from all this. While we're there, my sister and I had to think carefully with my fierce and elegant mother about this chess match that she's playing, like so many people play at her age, about when to downsize and when should she move in somewhere else and when will she need more care and how can she be in control of all that? And it makes me wonder how the world, all this is bumping up against your world. I mean, you've got your own version of this, yes? Be direct, I'm worried about you. And I want to know how you're holding up. So all of this together is, well, as we say now, a lot, right? And when it becomes a lot, we each lean into our more reptilian survival methods, right? For some of us, it's retreat. For others, it's aggression. For some, it's motivating. For others, it's terrifying. For some, we overreact, some dismiss, some consider relocating to another country where I guess they don't have problems to deal with. Some just acquiesce. Some become invigorated, some become stoic or defeated. Some of us eat and drink. Some of us exercise, paint, dig in the dirt, play music. Some of you post madly on social media. And I'm seeing you out there. And no matter what side of all this chaos you're on, we all participate in this collective whispered conversation of outrage. Can you believe they're doing that? I don't know. Sometimes I just want to turn my back and drive somewhere. You remember that great 1990s Indigo Girls song? Come on, baby, let's get out of this town. I got a full tank of gas and the top rolled down. I got some money I saved, enough to get underway. I do like the Indigo Girls. And baby, you can sleep while I drive. Let's just drive. So this past week, I was on several airplanes making that trip and a couple of airports, so I had some time to wonder, like what now, what, what should we do? When things feel like they're spinning out of control, how might we respond in ways that are helpful and holy and a little healthy, maybe? I mean, I know sometimes we have to do all those reptilian things I listed, but we all know none of that's going to actually solve the problem, right? So what? So I find myself back on this boat with a warm breeze. I'm back on this boat with Jesus and his disciples. And I find myself resonating with their sore backs and their weathered hands and their frustration of a night with no catch. I find myself resistant with them against Jesus when he says, get back in the boat. Let's cast off again. Let's see what we can find. I find myself unsure when Jesus suggests, try something different. He says, let's do things a new way. Because, you know, tired, sore, and defeated don't usually lead to ingenuity. But as we watch, the disciples trust Jesus, and they do get back in the boat. And they do cast off again, and they do things differently. And they let down the nets again. And this time, Success. Bounty. Why? I don't know. I mean, the best I can tell is they just said yes, and they got back in the boat with Jesus. That's why. Last week, while I was in Virginia, my brother-in-law, Jim, who's my best buddy, backpacking companion, all the great things, and it's very convenient that he's married to my sister, he was telling me about an event, something that happened. He was teaching this gospel story to a group of children he's a Baptist pastor at his church. And when he got to the point where they hauled in the net full of all the fish, he said, and the hair on the back of Peter's neck stood up. I know that's not in the text, but, you know, creative license isn't necessary when you're teaching children, right? So then he asked, why? Why did the hair on the back of Jesus' neck stand up? And one little boy blurted out, because God was in the boat with him. Simply stated, at times like this, we've got to get back in the boat with Jesus. We got to stay close. We got to stay connected. We got to come to church. And you did. And I'm proud of you. You got to sit in a pew, which is literally in an upside down boat. That's why it's called the nave. And then maybe you go for a walk after church. You sing a song. You take a song with you on your walk. You take the words of the hymn. We're singing some really familiar hymns today. Take those with you. Yeah? On your walk. Try something a little different. Wait a bit. Wait until the hair on the back of your neck stands up. Because then you'll know you're in the boat with Jesus. When that happens, then we can start hauling, can't we? We can start hauling in the catch. And we can get back to mending the world. You know this phrase, mending the world? It's a Jewish phrase. Tikkun Olam. Rowan Williams, in his book, A Century of Poetry, introduces his reader to this Hebrew phrase, Tikkun Olam, and a poet named Kate Foley. He tells us that the title is a Hebrew phrase regularly used in Judaism for those activities that uphold, witness to, and restore justice in the world. Acts of righteousness, he writes, are not simply a matter of obedience to the will of God for individuals. They also contribute to the restoring of the torn and damaged fabric of the entire creation. And then he lets us read Kate's poem. And towards the end of her poem, she writes this. She says, mending is no hero's task. Think instead raw threads, cobbled patches, tear-stained, blood-stained needle pricks, and where its rotten fabric parts, a patient, industrious makeover of the heart. So, my friends, I just invite you to sit for a minute. Catch your breath. Let your heart rate come back down. Breathe deeply. Allow some of the anxiety that you're carrying to be blown away by the warm breeze on the boat. Sing. Pray. Come eat a bit. Have a drink. And then wait. Wait till you feel it on the back of your neck. And get back in the boat with Jesus. And once you're in, you can stretch your tired back and massage your sore hands and start hauling on the nets. Or start mending the world. And you know, you don't have to look very far. It's torn pretty much everywhere, as far as I can tell. So just gently pick up a bit of fabric and start stitching again. I don't know. Maybe in so doing, at least, you will experience a patient, industrious makeover of your own heart.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.